Good evening and welcome to Left, Right and Centre. I'm Vishnu Shom. On the programme tonight, more bad news on the inflation front. India's retail inflation has surged to 7.79% in April. The consumer price-based inflation has stayed well above the Reserve Bank of India's upper tolerance limit for the fourth consecutive month. In April, the CPI inflation expanded at its highest pace in 8 years. This is terrible news for millions across India, with surging prices being very tough to handle. What are the implications? When will things start getting better? That's our first debate. Second on the show, despite no clear evidence of widespread forced religious conversion, the Basavaraj Bommai government in Karnataka passes the controversial Prevention of Conversion Act through an ordinance. The move, slammed by the church in Karnataka, comes at a time when members of the Christian community say that they've been deliberately targeted over false accusations of forced conversions. We'll be joined by Reverend Peter Machado, the Archbishop of Bangalore. But first, our big first debate, inflation at an 8-year high, the cost of living absolutely soaring. Joining us now, Rajat Sethi, the economist, Manish Sabharwal, Siddharth Sanyal, and Dr. Nasser Hussain. Thank you all very much for being with us. Rajat, I think, there was a very interesting statement made by the RBI some time back, where they said that the headwinds were against us and that for the foreseeable future, we would face external shocks. Is it your belief that these external shocks will now take place for an indefinite period of time? I ask this because there is no clear sign of the Ukraine war ending.
Well, I think it's more of a deja vu situation. In 2013, 2012, we had seen how post this massive monetary expansion, we had seen how the Fed induced monetary contraction through the entire markets into this taper tantrum and resulted into very, very high double-digit inflation in India back in those days. We are seeing a very similar sort of a scenario. But if you break down the retail inflation numbers, you will see that there are three, four big indications that predominant factor behind these recent 8% around that figure retail inflation is primarily because of fuel.
Yeah.
Also, the edible oil, one important factor that we need to keep in mind is the sunflower oil, which is consumed in India and forms part of that basket, constitutes a major chunk of that edible oil basket. All of it comes from Ukraine.
Yeah.
So Ukraine war certainly has impacted, and some of the retail inflation numbers that we are seeing is dependent on that.
Okay.
Now, of course, you are right. When is the war going to end? It's all up for anyone's guess. But please keep in mind that monetary policies, primarily led by RBI's intervention, will ensure that the inflation is brought down.
Sure.
We saw that the RBI governor, out of turn, came in and hiked the interest rates to tame the inflation. He was anticipating the inflation numbers to go up. Therefore, keeping the inflation numbers well within the range is going to be the principal responsibility of the RBI.
Okay.
And we will see certain steps being taken by them.
Manish Sabharwal, Manish Sabharwal, is it also your sense that, we've had one interest rate hike? Do you believe that it's inevitable that we'll see at least one, if not two more, to stabilize the situation with inflation likely to stay well above 7% for the next several months?
I mean, there are two structural factors and two cyclical factors, and it's unmodelable, right? The structural factors is obviously Western central banks will be shrinking their balance sheets. There were 4,500 securities with negative interest rates till 3 months ago. Now there are only 100 securities with negative interest rates. So China is obviously reducing its percentage of trade as GDP. It's down 15%. COVID and Russia. So I think it's unmodelable, but I think it would be unfair to think about today's situation similar to 2013. We have $600 billion of FX reserves, and India exported more software than Saudi Arabia did oil last year, and we have $80 billion of remittances. So, yes, manufacturing exports may not be where they were, but services exports are more than $300 billion. So I would be a little careful with this, as this is a passing shower, or a passing storm. But it's not climate change.
It's one heck of a long passing shower, I dare say. If you look at what the RBI has said, and I quote, heightened uncertainty surrounds the inflation trajectory, which is heavily contingent upon evolving geopolitical situations. Global commodity price dynamics are driving the path of food inflation in India, including prices of inflation-sensitive items that are impacted by global shortages due to output losses and export restrictions by key producing countries. This is scary. It's not a passing shower, I think, is the point that many would suggest.
Inflation is a complex cocktail of fiscal, monetary, and structural policy. Sure. I mean, we stayed disciplined with fiscal policy during COVID. Everybody was asking us to spend 10 lakh crores. We didn't do that, thankfully. I think monetary policy has caught up with the inflation. It's obviously been tentative because of COVID. You know, it was hard to model the impact. So I would say, of course, I mean, globally, U.S. inflation is higher than it's ever been in 40 years. Now, I think that's not a consolation to Indian consumers, but inflation is obviously a global phenomenon right now. I don't think the Ukraine war lasts forever. I think the COVID impact, which bought, you know, goods demand went up at the expense of services. When we were all in lockdown, we were buying things, but we weren't buying services.
No, but that this war has come at exactly the wrong time. We were coming out of COVID, our economy quite nicely, and then this happened. I just want to go across to Siddharth Sanyal. Is it enough for us to look only at external factors? What about it's something which Rajat and I have been discussing for years, bringing down oil prices. You know, it's this constant battle between the center and the states, you know, rationalizing oil prices, because inflation coming from fuel is something which impacts all parts of our economy. Is it not time now to look inside and actually get that happening? It brings relief to countless citizens.
Absolutely, Vishnu. My worry is the overall situation, the overall problem is much more fundamental in nature. We are constantly focusing only on the war. We are constantly focusing only on the oil prices. But I think what is extremely important at this moment, that the degree of dispersion of inflationary pressures at this moment across the basket. Many a times we have seen this kind of inflation numbers, headline numbers. Many a times we have seen inflation numbers even higher than that. Mm-hmm. But if it is coming from, say, just onion, just potato, just tomato, the chances are much more that within a 2-3 month period, it might correct quickly also.
Right.
Unfortunately, this current situation is absolutely not like that. There are pressures from food items. There are pressures from metals. There are pressures from fuel prices. There are pressures from some of the services baskets. And it is unlikely that some of them or a lot of them will disappear quickly. So we have to fasten our tight seat belts. This particular phase of elevated inflation can actually persist for several months, even if the war ceases tomorrow.
Dr. Nasir Hussain, I understand that politically this is untenable. I'm sure the Congress party would say that. But frankly, in this situation, what would the Congress have done differently?
I think we have shown that in the past during the Manmohan Singh government, when there were a crisis in the at the international level, we did try and maintain our fuel prices, and during recession we did a lot to maintain whatever best we could do in our country. So I think giving excuses of a war outside or giving excuses of something else would not help the government. What the people in the country, I completely agree with Mr. Sanyal. See, it is not just about the fuel prices or not just about one particular item or a commodity. It is about the whole complete inflation in all the sectors. You take anything, there have been continuous rise of rise in prices for the past few months and past few years. And this inflation is 8 years high. 8 years high. They can always say that in 2030, in the end of April of 2014, similar kind of an inflation was there. But that was for a temporary period. Now, the government which claims that they have handled economy very well, the finance minister which boasts that this is one of the fastest growing economy in the world, so should understand and try and bring about measures through which they can control inflation. The rich may be spared. But what about the poor people? What about the lower middle classes? They are feeling the brunt of the inflation in our country.
Okay.
Take any commodity, this rise in prices. For example, fuel. You have been telling that you people have been debating this on your channel for years. But then the government till now has not given one solid reason why it is not able to bring down the fuel prices in our country.
All right. I spoke a little while earlier on. to Shomokanti Ghosh, the chief economist at the State Bank of India, asking him specifically about these issues, asking about whether there would be further interest rate corrections, and if so, how many, and how long would the would inflation remain above 7%? Here's what he told me. Thanks very much for being with us. Shomokanti, you know, the RBI had come up with, revised numbers as far as the interest rate was concerned. But I think what was interesting was in their statements, they actually said that things were not auguring well at all. And now we've got these inflation numbers. What is your prognosis going forward for, let us say, the next 4 months?
Yeah, thank you, Vishnu, for having me on the show. I think we are also expecting a bad inflation number this month. In fact, our projection is around 7.7%. So it has come a tad higher than that. So this is the one aspect. The second thing is that next couple of months, inflation prints will actually not be good for all of us. This should be of mostly over 7%. And only after September, you could see some meaningful decline in inflation trajectory. But even then, the inflation numbers could stay above 6%, 6.5% to be more precise.
No, this is important, Shomokanti. As the chief economist at SBI, what you are saying is that up till the month of September, we are going to be between 6 and 7%, mostly 7%, and then it'll come down to 6% by September. So that's still above what the RBI considers a safe inflation limit, which is 6%, right?
No, I'll just clarify a little bit. Till September, the inflation pace could be in excess of 7%.
Right.
So, and only after September, you could see the inflation pace declining below 7%, but it could be still above 6.5%. The last 2 months of this fiscal, basically February, March, could see that the inflation cooling down to below 6.5% levels. This is assuming that, the war does not get even prolonged from the current levels. So, the inflation... Overall average inflation rate could be well in excess of 6%. Our projections are at 6.5%. Possibly the RBI projections, which will be revised in the June policy.
Yep.
But as of now, we'll see some action from the Reserve Bank of India in the forthcoming policies.
No, so that's another important point. Do you expect another interest rate hike to deal with this uncertainty and the inflation?
Yes, maybe two more rate hikes in the month of June and August, which takes the rate level to the pre-pandemic level when it was at 5.15%. And then the Reserve Bank of India takes a call of how to navigate this difficult scenario. So, don't expect that the interest rates to decline from the current levels, at least till the inflation numbers look a tad better.
I just want to read what the outlook that the Reserve Bank of India projected a few days back when they said, global commodity price dynamics are driving the path of food inflation in India, including prices of inflation-sensitive items that are impacted by global shortages due to output losses and export restrictions by key producing countries. Do you expect this situation to ease by September? Because many would suggest that the war in Ukraine, which is a driver certainly of inflated fuel and food costs, that's not going to end by September. It might go on indefinitely for a while. So... is this uncertainty likely to last for an indefinite period of time now?
No, see, the one point, Vishnu, is that possibly we can expect a favorable end to the war by the month of September. So if the war ends, then possibly the continued increases in prices may be capped. Mm-hmm. But of course, there will be an element of uncertainty going forward because we are seeing inflation in items like cereals, for example, where we have seen no inflation in the last couple of years. Then protein items are also seeing a significant increase. And all this is happening is because the global food inflation has been on a boil. And India cannot be an immune or exception to this. Edible oil is another item. So if I take all these factors into account, even though these factors may not constitute a significant proportion in the overall CPI basket, but their contribution in terms of weighted contribution means, significant increases is actually putting a premium on the CPI numbers. So my sense is that food inflation this year is actually playing the spoilsport in CPI rather than the fuel inflation, which was supposed to be.
All right. Thanks very much, Shomokanti Ghosh, for joining us, sharing that SBI perspective on what is looming ahead. It's not very good for the next several months. Let's hope that war does come to an end, and let's hope the overall system stabilizes. Thanks very much for joining us. Well, let's take a look at some of the comments which have been coming in on coup. One of the comments is, the cost of living is making the common man's life difficult. There should be an immediate intervention from the government on this matter. Deeksha writes in, says, unemployment is also at an all-time high. How will the middle-class man survive? Gopi Chan says, the poor and vulnerable of Mother India have had it with rising costs and inflation. In fact, the situation getting absolutely worse. Next up on the program, no clear evidence of widespread forced religious conversion, but the Basavaraj Bommai government in Karnataka has passed the controversial Prevention of Conversion Act. The move has been slammed by the church in the state in Karnataka and comes at a time when members of the Christian community say that they've been deliberately targeted over false accusations of forced conversions. We're now joined by Reverend Peter Mercado, the Archbishop of Bangalore. Archbishop, thanks very much for being with us. Do you think this bill has been passed through this ordinance as an effort to deliberately and directly target the Christian community in Karnataka?
I cannot decipher what is their intentions are. In fact, we were quite happy that it is not coming up for a long time now. And there is a lull, silence, and surely a lot of feasts of the different communities were there also. And I was under the impression, in fact, some of the BJP good people had also told me that government may not be too keen to go ahead, because the Christian community is always a lovable community, a peaceful community, a community that also works for the other communities. But today it was quite a surprise for me. I would say it was really not a pleasant surprise.
Archbishop, isn't the biggest problem over here the fact that while there are all of these allegations of forced conversions, done by the Christian community in Karnataka, there is no statistical evidence. We've tried for months to find out how many cases there actually were. Isn't this the most glaring omission?
Surely. You know, sometime back when there was the Bible issue of one particular school in Bangalore, you're supposed to have given Bible, etc., or had Bible reading and all. And in that controversy, I had even challenged the government, give me one instance of the 600 schools in Bangalore where the Christian schools are running, but there is no conversion. If there is even one conversion, I would surely take it very seriously. But the government, I think, is not serious enough to inquire how many children have been converted, how many have become Christians. I feel very sad. I respect the government. I have great regard for the chief minister and many of the ministers also. I only think that perhaps they are pressurized by certain groups, to do this. You know, in this time of what we call politics or elections, etc., to polarize the communities so that someone gains something out of these divisions and accusations.
You know, Archbishop, in this press release of yours, which you had out earlier on, what I found most worrying is that your sense that fringe elements would now be allowed out in Karnataka on the basis of this law, take the law into their own hands, and physically threaten members of the Christian community? Why do you say this, sir?
I would say yes, because even without the bill, there were so many attacks on our communities, in our schools, in our places of worship. You know, even our Christmas celebration was considered as not very proper in some places. So without the bill, we have had a lot of problems. Now I say that when the bill is passed, or perhaps when the bill, governor gives assent to the bill, surely it would be as good as anyone walks with something called like a license to do what he wants. And I've always admired many things of this government. I would like to appreciate many good things about them. But as regards these fringe elements, they have not been able to control them. They have not been able to put them under their grip, as it were. And as you asked me a question, we will be surely appealing to the governor in all justice, in all integrity, to say that. And we will put our case in front of the governor, and the governor is the head of the state, who has to be neutral, who has to be impartial and surely generous to people who do good things.
You know, Archbishop, one of the biggest concerns in this bill, you know, it's become the law in Karnataka because it's been pushed through by an ordinance, is that it refers to allurement as being illegal. In other words, potentially free education, orphanages which have been set up, schools which have been set up, for example, by the Christian community. These can all be interpreted as allurement. And isn't that a key part of the problem? There is no real definition of how you allure somebody and thereby, you know, forcibly convert them.
Yes, I mentioned it earlier, because that is the most hurting point, that we do these things, community activities, development, schools, hospitals. In fact, we don't gain anything out of it. And our own community members are so minuscule that we will not be able to, I mean, we are not interested in running for only for our sake. But we are happy to serve the nation, to serve the country. We are also patriots. We have soldiers among us. We have teachers among us. And, you know, in the teaching, you can do a lot of transformation. You can almost revolutionize the whole country through education. And everyone knows that the Christian education is one of the best in the world.
Right.
In fact, all these people who criticize us, the political leaders, many of them are our own students. They have this one. And many of them confess to us to say that the education that we have received was one of the best that we have imparted to them. But then, as you said, there is a little lurking fear among them that this education perhaps should be benefit the rich, the elite, but not to the poor, not to the Dalits, not to those people who are this one. That is not our principle and our policy.
Well, Archbishop, you know, it's sad what you mentioned, this big worry about physical security and safety. And we've seen members of the Christian community in Karnataka being attacked. And nobody's really understood any of these details of allegations of mass forced conversions. But hopefully your appeal to the governor will be looked at, if not for anything else, than to ensure that members of your community, indeed all communities, are protected. We're out of time on Left, Right and Center. From all of us here, good night.